We've been digging into some really fascinating historical sources about the Waldensians recently, and it struck me that there are these two really distinct stories about where they originated. It's kind of like finding two different springs, both claiming to be the source of the same river.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. And that central question, were the Waldensians a 12th century movement sparked by Valdez of Leon, or do their roots run much deeper, perhaps even into the earliest centuries of the Christian Church? That's really the core of what we're exploring in this deep dive.
Exactly. Our mission today is to unpack these two main accounts, to look at what evidence exists, and sometimes more interestingly, what doesn't, and to really understand why these different origin stories mattered, both to the Waldensians themselves and to the broader historical narrative.
Right. So let's lay out those two primary narratives for everyone. The first, and the one with the most robust historical support, points to the 12th century, around 1172, with Valdez of Leon. We have pretty solid data confirming his existence and connecting his emergence to a period of significant famine in the region.
And then there are these older, more evocative accounts that try to link the Waldensians to figures and events much earlier in church history. We're talking about Claude of Turin in the 9th century, and even that almost legendary story surrounding Constantine's donation back in the 4th century.
Yeah, no, it's important for people to understand from the outset that while we will uncover some intriguing parallels, particularly with someone like Claude of Turin, the older origin stories, especially the Constantine narrative, are generally understood to have evolved into more of a myth over time. These weren't necessarily deliberate lies, but rather stories that kind of took shape and were reshaped by the Waldensians themselves over generations.
Okay, so let's dive into this Constantine's donation myth first. Now, for those who might not be completely familiar, what was the original idea behind this story?
Well, the original myth, which actually popped up several centuries after the events it describes, claimed that Emperor Constantine, back in the early 4th century, actually bequeathed half of the Roman Empire to Pope Sylvester I. I mean, that would have been an enormous transfer of temporal power to the papacy.
Huge implications, yeah. But the general historical understanding now of this donation is what?
The overwhelming historical consensus is that the donation of Constantine was a fabrication. It was a myth created probably by the Roman Catholic Church itself in the 8th century. The main motivation seems to have been to kind of bolster the church's claims to temporal authority and its extensive land holdings, especially when those claims were being challenged.
Right, so it was a way to retroactively justify the church's power and wealth by saying, look, this was granted to us by the emperor himself. Way back when. So how did the Waldensians then take this 8th century fabrication and adapt it? What's the key insight there?
What's really fascinating is how a group like the early Waldensians, who are pretty marginalized, creatively reinterpreted an existing story to serve their own needs. They basically used the donation myth to explain what they saw as a fundamental ancient split within the early church. Their version stressed that there was an initial principled opposition to the Roman Church accepting all this worldly power and wealth. They even suggested, that the popes who embraced this power were successors of Constantine, not of Peter, drawing a really sharp contrast in their view of true spiritual leadership.
Ah, okay.
So the key insight maybe isn't the historical accuracy of the donation itself or even the Waldensian adaptation, but how a community facing hardship creatively uses existing stories to establish their own spiritual lineage and challenge the dominant powers.
So for the Waldensians, it wasn't just about disagreeing with the church's wealth. It was seeing that wealth as a sign of a fundamental deviation from the true, humble path laid out by Christ and the apostles, right?
Exactly right. The Waldensian spin on the myth painted this picture of an early critical split. In their story, when Sylvester accepted Constantine's huge donation, a righteous companion of Sylvester vehemently refused this worldly power and chose to separate. This act became symbolic of the beginning of a smaller, but in their eyes, the true church one that stayed faithful to the ideals of poverty and humility that they themselves championed.
That's a really powerful image, this small, dedicated group breaking away to preserve what they saw as the core values. Do we have any idea when this specific Waldensian version of the Constantine myth first appeared in, like, written form?
The earliest written record we have of this particular adaptation is in a text called The Book of the Elect, which dates back to 1367. This text explicitly details how the split within the church happened in 325 AD, directly linked to Constantine's supposed donation.
Wow, 325 AD.
Yeah, so for the Waldensians, this narrative gave them this powerful sense of historical continuity. It suggested their movement wasn't some new heresy, but the continuation of a faithful remnant that had existed alongside the more powerful worldly Roman Church for well over 1,000 years. And, you know, the Book of the Elect wasn't like some public decree. It was more of a key internal document, helping to solidify their own understanding of their history and identity.
Okay, so that covers the Constantine connection. Now let's shift our focus to this other really intriguing figure, Claude of Turin, from the 9th century. Who was he, and why does his name keep popping up when we talk about Waldensian origins?
Claude of Turin was definitely a significant figure in his own right. He was appointed as a Roman Catholic bishop of Turin back in 817. What makes him particularly interesting in this context are his beliefs, which you could certainly describe as pretty unorthodox for a bishop within the Catholic Church of the 9th century.
Unorthodox in what specific ways? Like, what did he believe or push for that set him apart?
Well, Claude was quite vocal and active, actually, in opposing several religious practices that were getting really common in the 9th century. He strongly condemned the worship of holy images, you know, statues, icons, and even pushed for their removal from churches in his area. On top of that, he preached justification by faith.
Wow, already back then.
Yeah, a core idea that, you know, became central way later in the Protestant Reformation, the idea that salvation comes through belief, not just good works or church rituals. He also rejected the idea of purgatory, which was just emerging, questioned venerating saintly relics, and challenged the whole idea of pilgrimages being effective for penance.
So things like relic veneration were pretty standard then.
Oh yeah, quite standard. So Claude's opposition would have been a really significant departure.
That sounds like he was really pushing against established norms on several key points, centuries before the Reformation even happened. You mentioned a particularly striking quote from Claude about religious imagery. Could you share that again?
Absolutely. Claude famously argued that if people felt compelled to adore a cross because Christ hung on it, then by the same logic, they ought also to adore mangers because he lay in one, or asses because he rode on one. It really highlights his focus on the person of Christ and the spiritual reality of faith, rather than, you know, venerating physical objects connected to his life.
That's a very direct way to put it, theologically pointed. So given these seemingly proto-Reformation beliefs centuries early, is there a direct historical line we can trace from Claude to Valdez and the Waldensians? Was Valdez like directly influenced by Claude's teachings?
Okay, this is a really crucial point to get. Currently, there's a lack of direct historical evidence, no surviving documents, no clear lines of transmission that explicitly link Claude's teachings directly to the emergence of Valdez and his followers in the 12th century. We just don't have a documented historical bridge connecting those two figures across those three centuries. So, yeah, we have these fascinating parallels in their beliefs. The natural question is there a direct line of influence? And the answer, based on current historical evidence, is no.
So while their theological ideas might share some striking similarities, we can't definitively say Valdez consciously drew on Claude or that there was some continuous movement connecting them.
Exactly. While it's certainly plausible, maybe, that some of Claude's ideas got passed down orally within the Piedmont region, they were both active there, centuries apart, without concrete proof, it's also quite possible these similar beliefs just arose independently, you know, through a renewed personal focus on the scriptures, especially the New Testament. If you go straight to the source, you might just arrive at similar interpretations.
That makes a lot of sense. If both are independently digging into the same core texts, you could definitely see similar conclusions popping up. You also mentioned another interesting figure, Arnold of Brescia, and his potential relevance here.
Yes, Arnold of Brescia. He was a 12th century figure living about 300 years after Claude, but also before Valdez really gained prominence. He gathered communities in Lombardy, which is geographically near Turin, where Claude was bishop based on what he understood to be the principles of the early church. Things like focusing on apostolic discipleship, sharing property among believers. And he'd studied with Peter Abelard, who was a famous philosopher and theologian known for critical thinking, so that intellectual environment probably influenced Arnold's reformist ideas too.
And how might Claude fit into Arnold's story? Is there maybe a more demonstrable connection there?
Well, we still lack definitive proof of a direct link, but the undeniable parallels between Claude's teachings, his emphasis on scripture, his critique of religious imagery and worldly church power, and the beliefs pushed by Arnold and later the Waldensians, suggest a potential, though unproven, influence. It's definitely possible that Claude's ideas, having circulated in the region for centuries, could have indirectly influenced Arnold as he developed his own vision for Christian community reform.
It's intriguing how these threads of similar theological thought seem to just surface and resurface in different times and places. I remember reading that the modern Waldensian church even has a publishing house named after Claude. That must indicate some level of perceived connection, right? Some appreciation.
It absolutely does. The 20th century naming of their publishing house, Claudiana Press, is a clear symbolic gesture. It shows the modern Waldensian church's deep appreciation for what they see as Claude of Turin's early courageous biblical witness and his stand against certain church practices of his day. It's a connection rooted in shared theological convictions, even if, you know, a direct historical lineage is tough to definitively prove.
So to sort of wrap up this part of the discussion, while there are certainly compelling theological parallels between Claude's beliefs and those of the Waldensians, and maybe a plausible scenario for indirect influence, especially on figures like Arnold, the idea of a continuous organized Waldensian community tracing its unbroken history directly back to Claude in the 9th century, that's just not supported by direct historical evidence right now.
That's a very accurate and nuanced summary, yeah. Asserting an unbroken, distinct community from the 9th to the 12th century is unfounded based on what we know. Now, let's shift our focus to the 12th century and the historical reality of Valdez himself.
Yes, because amidst all these fascinating but sometimes historically hazy origin stories, Valdez of Leon emerges as a much more firmly established historical figure.
Precisely. In contrast to those earlier proposed connections, we have sufficient historical data to confirm Valdez's existence and the emergence of the religious movement that began with him around 1172 in Leon. The historical sources we have suggest his initial push for radical change was likely connected to a severe famine that hit the region. That seemed to lead him to a profound commitment to a life of poverty and a deep dive into studying and embracing the gospel's teachings.
Okay, so if we have this reasonably well-documented 12th century origin with Valdez, why did the Waldensians later develop and hold on to these older, more mythical origin stories, linking them back to Constantine or Claude? What was the driving force behind that?
Right. This is where understanding the crucial role of persecution becomes absolutely central to grasping why these origin myths developed and stuck around. The anonymous author of The Book of the Elect, for instance, probably recognized the critical importance of providing a written history, a sense of deep historical roots, for a community that, while valuing oral tradition, was facing increasing threats to its very existence. Creating a narrative, even one incorporating myth and legend, provided this powerful sense of continuity, legitimacy, and, well, divine purpose.
And the way the Book of the Elect was written, you mentioned it had a kind of poetic quality. Was that, like, a deliberate choice?
Yeah, the concise rhythmic phrasing you find in the Book of the Elect strongly suggests it was intentionally composed to be easier to memorize and recite. In a time when Waldensians were increasingly being scattered, forced underground by persecution, this emphasis on oral transmission became absolutely vital for preserving their history, their core beliefs, their sense of shared identity.
So it functioned kind of like a living history, passed down through generations, especially when written records were scarce or were being actively destroyed by their persecutors.
Precisely. Roman Catholic inquisitors routinely, systematically destroyed Waldensian writings, their books, any documents they saw as heretical evidence. This brutal suppression of their written materials made oral tradition incredibly important, often the only means of maintaining their history and the basic tenets of their faith. And as generations passed, relying on memory naturally allowed for some reshaping, adaptation, maybe embellishment of the original stories, as people sought to understand and explain their origins in the context of their ongoing struggles.
So these myths weren't necessarily conscious, malicious fabrications, but maybe more of a way for successive generations to interpret their origins through the lens of their present experiences, especially the intense persecution they faced, and to kind of bolster their resolve.
That's a very insightful way to put it, yeah. The narrative in the Book of the Elect and the broader tradition of these older origins served several crucial purposes. First, it helped doctrinally justify their commitment to poverty, chastity, and their conviction to preach the gospel. But maybe even more importantly, it provided a profound source of encouragement, solace, and resilience during these long periods of intense persecution.
Right.
By portraying themselves as the true remnant of the early uncorrupted church, facing similar opposition and suffering as the apostles, they found this powerful sense of validation and divine purpose in their suffering.
It gave their struggle this profound historical, even biblical framework, connecting them to a much larger story of faithful resistance against powerful forces. You mentioned that the Constantine myth itself underwent some interesting changes over time within the Book of the Elect. Could you give us a couple of specific examples of how these origin stories evolved?
Certainly. In the earliest surviving edition of the Book of the Elect from 1367, the founder is just called Valdez. No first name. It's not until later in the 14th century that we first see him called Peter Valdez, which, of course, immediately makes you think of the Apostle Peter and lends this apostolic connection to their origins.
Ah, clever.
Then, by the 1420 revision of the text, this Peter Valdez is presented not as the original 12th century founder, but as a contemporary of a 14th century Pope Sylvester, crucially, as a companion of this pope, who refused Constantine's donation and thus preserved the true, uncorrupted church. This revision effectively pushed their lineage back even further, linking them more explicitly to the time of the apostles through this act of resisting worldly power. And then, in an early 15th century manuscript, we even find sermons attributed to a Roman Catholic cardinal also named Peter Valdez, further blurring the lines and reinforcing this idea of ancient, maybe even somewhat accepted, if ultimately marginalized, origins within broader church history.
It's fascinating to see how the narrative adapted and changed over time, seemingly responding to the needs and the evolving understanding of each generation. You also highlighted the brutal reality of the Inquisition and the immense sustained pressure put on them.
Oh, the Inquisition, especially after the Waldensians were officially condemned as heretics by the church in 1215, was truly relentless, a brutal campaign of suppression. Starting mid-13th century, the Dominican order became the primary tool for prosecuting and eradicating what the church considered heresy. This involved systematically confiscating Waldensian property, widespread use of torture to get confessions and recantations, and often execution, usually by burning at the stake.
Burning? Why burning specifically?
Well, the prevailing theological belief within the Catholic Church then was that burning the bodies of heretics would actually prevent their resurrection. It was brutal. And tragically, Waldensian children were often forcibly removed from their families and raised Catholic, trying to break the transmission of their beliefs.
It just paints such a grim picture. It's almost unimaginable that they managed to maintain their identity and faith through such sustained violent persecution.
Their endurance is truly remarkable. It's a powerful testament to the resilience of their community and the depth of their convictions. Despite facing at least 33 documented, organized persecutions over 500 years, not just from the church, but also from secular powers like the King of Savoy, the French monarchy, the Waldensian movement persisted. The leadership of their preachers, the Barba, with their constant emphasis on humility, simple living, and deep personal faith in Christ, played a crucial role. And as we've discussed, these origin myths, regardless of strict historical accuracy, became this vital source of spiritual strength, providing a tangible link to what they believed was the true ancient church, giving them the fortitude to withstand unimaginable hardship.
So fast forward to the 16th century when the Protestant Reformation kicks off. How did these pre-existing ideas and narratives about Waldensian origins fit into that broader context?
Well, during the early Reformation, as the Reformers were trying to establish their own theological legitimacy and historical roots separate from Rome, many Protestant scholars eagerly identified the Waldensians as their spiritual forerunners, their ancestors in faith. They saw the Waldensians as this pre-Reformation movement that had, for centuries, preserved the true Christian faith against what they saw as the corruption and doctrinal errors of the Catholic Church. The long-held myths about the Waldensians' ancient origins fit very neatly into this Protestant narrative, giving them a historical precedent for their own break with Rome.
So the Protestant reformers basically adopted and kind of amplified these existing ideas about the Waldensians' ancient origins to bolster their own claims.
To a significant extent, yes. And furthermore, early Waldensian historians in the 17th century, figures like John Leisure and Samuel Moreland, they took on the task of documenting Waldensian history. But they often relied heavily on oral tradition and these long-held beliefs about their ancient roots. Because, you know, that was still a respected historical method back then. They aimed to construct this comprehensive history that blended whatever documented facts they could find with these deeply ingrained traditions about their origins stretching way back to the early church.
It sounds like this desire for a long, venerable history, for a sense of continuity with the early church, was a powerful motivator both for the Waldensians facing persecution and later for the Protestants seeking historical legitimacy.
Absolutely. In times of intense persecution and when you're striving to establish theological legitimacy against powerful opposition, having a perceived historical pedigree reaching back to the early church carried immense weight. It provided a crucial sense of spiritual and historical validation.
So looking at the big picture, the sweep of history, what is the enduring legacy of the Waldensians, regardless of the precise details of their earliest beginnings?
Their legacy is profoundly significant, really. The Waldensian movement holds this unique distinction. It's the only Christian movement deemed heretical by the Roman Catholic Church in the medieval period that has survived into modern times. That remarkable fact alone speaks volumes about their resilience and the enduring power of their faith. They played a crucial role in effectively communicating the core teachings of Jesus, the significance of his life, death, resurrection, directly to lay people centuries before the Reformation made scripture more widely available. Their core emphasis on living out a faith marked by love from a pure heart, a good conscience, and sincere faith principles you see echoed in Paul's letters to Timothy that remains a central and vital part of Christian belief today.
So to kind of bring it all together then, we have the historically verifiable origins in the 12th century with Valdez of Leon. And alongside that, these older, more evocative narratives linking them to figures like Constantine and Claude of Turin, while these older stories are now largely understood as myths that developed and evolved over time, particularly as a response to centuries of brutal persecution, they played an absolutely critical role in shaping and sustaining Waldensian identity and resilience.
Precisely. The crucial distinction for you to take away is the difference between the historically verifiable beginnings with Valdez and the later, but equally important, myth-making that served to strengthen their identity and bolster their resilience against centuries of profound adversity.
It really makes you reflect on why these origin stories were so vital to the Waldensians. It wasn't just about historical accuracy in our modern sense, was it? It was fundamentally about survival, about forging a sense of shared identity, meaning, and unwavering strength when facing what must have seemed like insurmountable opposition. There's a really deep human need, isn't there, to connect to a meaningful past, to feel like you're part of a larger story, especially when facing relentless hardship.
That's a truly insightful observation, yeah. And this deep dive into the Waldensian origins, it raises a really profound question for all of us to consider. How does a community's understanding of its own history, whether that understanding is perfectly aligned with modern historical scholarship or has been shaped and adapted over time, how does that ultimately shape its identity and its capacity to endure profound hardship? Are there parallels we can maybe draw in other significant historical movements or even, you know, in the narratives we construct around our own lives and the challenges we face? It's definitely something to mull over.